Chapter 10 Chemical Warfare. I trailed off as I stared off into the forest. Those little goblins are a lot smarter than they look. No wonder the orcs are using them to do their dirty work.
I'm just wondering why they're working for the orcs at all. If they are truly intelligent enough to mix living things together to create a new species, then why would they allow themselves to be subjected to those brutes?
Fear is one hell of a drug. Or maybe there's something more insidious behind it all.
Who says they're oppressed, even?
Warren noted.
For all we know, the goblins could actually be the one in charge, and the orcs and wargs might be working for them.
I doubt that.
Batari objected.
Look at how frail and easy the goblins were to kill. Even with their best creations at their side, I don't think they'd stand a chance against those brutish green beasts we fought before.
We haven't seen their greatest inventions. All we've seen so far is the Death Sprayer plant, and it was strong enough to wipe out an entire population of Spindrel people. For all we know, they could be working on things that are a million times worse.
What if...
Mira gasped as her golden eyes grew wide.
What if they already have? And what if it's already on our island? Think about how many times the orcs have been there, both before you arrived and in the season cycle since.
If that were the case, somebody would have seen something by now. I tried to calm the warriors' nerves. Nobody back home has noticed any strange plants or new creatures wandering about, so I wouldn't worry about it too much. Besides, knowing the orcs the way I do, there's no way they would resort to chemical warfare right off the bat. Think about how much they like to go around swinging their dicks like they're hot shit, taking everything they want by force. To them, resorting to the help of a creature more intelligent than they are is probably a sign of weakness.
So you think it's a last resort kind of thing?
The golden-scaled dragonkin questioned. I would imagine.
I wouldn't.
Pei shook her silver locks as she stepped forward.
These plants showed up on our island several season cycles ago. If they're not naturally occurring, then that means the goblins have been creating them at least since then. That's lots of time.
Alvi grumbled.
Probably lots of weapons. You know.
Ashanti scoffed as she crossed her arms across her chest, quirked her head to the right, and smirked.
There is one way to find out what's going on with these goblins.
Oh!
Nadir cackled, and then ran her hands through the twins' hair.
I like where this is going. Are you ready to go on your first adventure, Kieran Terra?
The babies both responded with a happy coo, and I felt a twinge of amusement. These Kunag dragonkin children were only a few hours old, and they were already showing the spunk of their mother.
Whatever is she suggesting, Nadir?
Boongal asked telepathically.
Correct me if I'm wrong,
Nadir said in the direction of Ashanti, though her eyes were locked on Boongal.
But I think Ashanti's saying we should go out into the forest, find some of these goblins, and then smash them into submission. Yes,
Lazan declared as she held her fist into the air.
I've been out of the fight for far too long, and I'm all for running out and smashing something.
You were in labor for less than a day. I chuckled and shook my head.
That is quite a long time for a Kunag to be impaled.
Lazan shrugged, and she looked down at Jaren in her arms.
We must teach our child they should never back down from a fight, even when they are at death's door.
You just had a child.
Shala rolled her eyes.
Most of us have been there already, and it's not as bad as you're claiming it is.
What are you talking about?
Theora's soft voice gasped.
It is hour after hour of strenuous labor, after which you push a living creature out of your body. It's one of the worst pains I have ever experienced.
In spite of what Alvi has joked, spindrel births are actually quite painless.
Valea noted.
Hence why I was so surprised to hear Nadir and Lazan's cries of agony.
Wow.
Theora muttered under her breath.
If only we were all so lucky.
I wouldn't know.
Ashanti shrugged.
The Chero people have never given birth before.
Never?
Errol gasped.
Did all of your men perish too? Or were you simply waiting until the time was right?
They never existed.
Batari said as she patted her stomach.
The Chero people were created by the god Tambori solely to protect the dragons of our island. We were never meant to procreate or take a mate or start a family. Thankfully, the Draco Rex changed all of that.
A life without men at all?
Ura whistled.
I don't know if that's a blessing or a curse.
It depends on the men.
Awara chuckled.
The Morpho men were about as warm and caring as a dead fish, and their attempts at mating held the same charm.
That sounds awful.
Pei shuddered.
What's even the point?
Thank goodness the first man we met was the Draco Rex.
Batari smiled.
Life has been nothing but a pleasure and a joy since Tambori blessed us with his presence.
Emphasis on the pleasure.
Shala snickered.
Oh, come on!
Mirella gagged and rolled her eyes.
Ugh. Can't we go one conversation without talking about gross stuff like that?
Gross stuff like what?
Kaylon interjected.
I was always told the act of mating was supposed to be a beautiful, happy occasion.
Only if you know how to do it, kid.
Owara joked.
Don't be a dead fish.
I don't get it,
the spindrel boy admitted.
Does that mean I should make sure I smell good?
That's a star.
The orange-haired butterfly woman winked at the boy.
Nobody wants to mate with a dude who smells like a dead fish.
Don't smell like a dead fish,
Kaylon said as he nodded and narrowed his eyes.
Got it.
Do you normally smell like a dead fish?
Mirella cringed.
Don't you bathe?
When I'm out in the forest and get really dirty. Otherwise, I take the standard bath once a month.
He didn't just say that out loud.
Saren hung her head and sighed.
Once a month?
My daughter sputtered.
Well, yeah,
Kaylon said in a way more confident tone than he needed.
Isn't that the standard?
No.
Mirella shook her head furiously.
Not even close. We bathe on the Dragonkin Island every single day if we can.
That's what we do as well.
Pei grumbled.
However, somebody in our tribe got it into their head that it would be a wonderful idea to tell Kaylon otherwise.
All I told him was the natural oils in his skin would be washed off if he bathed every single day.
Valea protested.
I never thought he would take it to mean only bathe once a month.
Believe it or not, that's actually typical teenage boy stuff. I was never like that, but you should have seen some of the dudes I went to school with. Your sense of smell never recovers once you've been inside of a middle school locker room day in and day out.
Ugh, God, boys are so gross.
That's right. I teased my oldest child.
They're very, very gross, and they always will be. Just remember that.
If bathing daily is the course of action I need to take to win your affection,
Kaylon declared,
then that is the course I will take.
How romantic.
Saren giggled to Mirella.
Talk about a real sacrifice.
Mirella gave her water dragon a playful slap on the shoulder, and then the two teenage girls laughed in unison. All the while, Kaylon just looked on, completely oblivious.
You humanoids sure are a strange lot,
Mungao declared as he watched the scene unfold with a frown.
All this talk of mating and bathing and gods. Being a dragon is far simpler of a life, though we are not simple beings.
Speak for yourself. I am about as simple as they come. Give me a boar, open air to fly in, and a few head scratches every now and again, and I'm set for life. Same here,
Swa'er noted in his little voice.
All I want is food, shelter, and cuddles.
I say.
Mungao placed his paw upon his scaly chest.
You are both still infants, completely untethered of all ambitions and all responsibility. Just wait until you grow to be my age, dear boys. Oh, then you will experience the true thrill of this multi-act play that we call life.
Or, well, keep hanging around with Ben, where we get lots of wild boars and open air. And head scratches! You can't forget the... Oh, dance the spot.
So Ayer's words were cut off by Batari, who reached over and began to scratch the wind dragon just underneath his fuzzy chin. The little guy's long yellow whiskers twitched like two gangling noodles being whipped around in a whirlpool, and his eyes closed as he raised his head to the sky.
So, that's it. The two of you have no ambitions whatsoever. No desire to do something greater than your own mortal form.
Wild boars and head scratches.
Swa'er confirmed in an almost orgasmic tone.
That's all I need in life.
Indeed.
The fat brown dragon sighed, and then he looked over at Nadir.
I say, my beloved bondmate, would you be willing to indulge me in some of these... head scratches these two speak of? I have never before experienced such a phenomenon.
Seriously?
Nadir huffed.
You're supposed to be the big bad dragon of our crew, the one who can destroy entire villages with a single breath of fire and stomp our enemies into the ground with nothing but your bare paws.
I am.
Mungao held his head high.
And right now, this big bad dragon is asking for head scratches.
Nadir frowned and stared at the dragon in disbelief for a moment before she took a deep breath, shook her head, and motioned for Mungao to approach. Mungao's eyes lit up like a puppy who had just seen a steak as he fluttered over to our position on the beach. The brown dragon then landed on the sand with a dull, powerful thud, right beyond the perimeter of our shelter. Boongal smiled intensely as he went prone, and bits of his stomach fat squished out from underneath him like Play-Doh underneath a car's wheel. Nadir mumbled under her breath as she approached her bondmate, with the twins tied firmly to her back. When she got within range of the beast, she outstretched her hand, placed it on the fold of his right jowl, and then began to scratch at his scaly flesh with her claws. At first, Boongal seemed indifferent to the action, and he just laid there with narrowed eyes that looked off to the horizon. Then his whole demeanor changed. The fat dragon's eyes grew wide as his pupils dilated, and his tail began to tremble back and forth behind him. Boongal closed his eyes as his body relaxed, and soon the beach was filled with the dull, happy roar of his dragon hum. Boongal's hum was much, much more powerful than George's or Tyrion's, and the leaves of trees off in the distance seemed to rustle as they vibrated along with his sound. It was a very calm, soothing noise, and I felt a brief moment of pure serenity wash across my body. Even Nadir and the twins weren't immune to Boongal's hum. The two swaddled babies suddenly let out a big yawn as their eyes grew droopy, and within seconds Okir and Terra were both out like a light. Meanwhile, Nadir's annoyed expression disappeared from her face, and a half-smile rose up the side of her mouth as her fuzzy black tail began to flick back and forth in time with the dragon's hum. Her body seemed to lose all its tension as well, and her shoulders slumped as her stance became more open.
Okay,
I announced with a yawn.
Huh. Cut that out, or we're all gonna fall asleep over here.
Nadir stopped scratching, and Boongal looked at her with a smug grin.
Oh, that was pleasant. Oh, my last bondmates never did anything like that.
They sound like terrible bondmates. I make sure to give Saren here the love she deserves every single day.
The same with Swire. I don't think the poor guy would make it without all the affection I gave him.
Remember who we are dealing with? All of those dragons that made up Tyrion and Boongal's clan were bonded with Morpho men. They never really got into their relationship with the dragons, though I can only imagine they were just as caring with them as they were with their women.
That is mostly true. My previous bondmate and I had a somewhat symbiotic relationship. He looked after me, sure, but it was always understood that I was nothing more than a dependent for him.
A dependent who could have gobbled him up in seconds,
Nadir proclaimed.
Why would you take that from anybody?
Oh, he was my bondmate.
The dragon shrugged.
At the time, I did not realize it was possible to change. Also, it is not like he was ever mean or cruel, just, distant.
Welcome to the Morpho Men experience.
Owara scoffed.
Kaku, forgive me, but I'm actually somewhat relieved they are gone. I mean, I'd never wish death on anyone, but...
I get it. I reassured the butterfly woman as I approached her and placed my hand against her soft face. You felt trapped, and now you are free.
Exactly.
The orange-haired beauty smiled.
And I couldn't have been freed by a better man.
I say...
Boongal sniffled and wiped away a tear.
Oh, brava! I haven't felt this emotional since my clan and I performed the tragedy of Malphus the Burnt for our annual gathering.
Malphus the Burnt?
Nadir asked with a devilish grin.
He sounds like a very mighty dragon.
Oh, he was not, I'm afraid.
Boongal shook his head.
The legends called him Malphus the Burnt because he is the only dragon to have been swallowed up by a volcanic eruption.
That sounds like an incredible way to go,
the Kunag woman gasped.
A true warrior's death.
Not exactly. He was sleeping when it happened. Poor Malthus simply chose the wrong volcano to build a nest in.
Hold on. I trailed off as a sudden epiphany came to me. Do all of your kind build their nests in volcanoes? I know that's where we found your clan, but I thought that was just a freak coincidence.
Oh, you did not know that?
The fat dragon sounded shocked.
I would have thought it was common knowledge, considering your people literally have... dragon in the name.
Water dragons, Jonas explained. We have that name because we are so close to water dragons, and they tend to nest on the beach.
Oh, the beach?
Boongal gasped as he looked at Saren.
Oh, what tomfoolery is this? I have known many water dragons in my day, but I never knew they nested in such an unsafe location.
It's not unsafe if you know how to protect it.
Saren retorted with a huff.
Water dragons are most in their element when they are close to the sea. I would assume your kind nests in volcanoes because it is where they are in their element, surrounded by unstable deadly fire that could erupt at any moment.
I knew I made the right choice in bonding with you.
Nadir snickered.
The wind dragons nested in the hilly plains of our land.
Batari reminded us all.
An area covered with brisk wind and open air.
Wow.
Kalon's voice complained.
It's like every other race has dragons other than us. Why can't we be as cool as these guys?
Patience, Kalon.
Pei told her son.
Now that we are with the Draco Rex, it is only a matter of time before the Spindrel people have access to these incredible creatures.
Too bad it'll be your mom or Shala or Ariel first, since they're all pregnant with my siblings and you need my father's genes to control one of the fire breathers.
Valeya too.
What?
My daughter's face scrunched up. Valeya would have a chance too.
What? Dad! Oh, ew!
Morella gagged.
Hold on.
Kalon's eyes darted back and forth as he looked at the ground.
If your father's genes need to be inside of the person controlling the dragon, then that means our child could be a dragon tamer, too. You have a part of your father's genes in you, so any child you would have it too, right?
Morella's face soured even more, and she shook her head like she was caught in a blender.
No.
She muttered under her breath.
No. Ugh.
You don't have to have Ben's genes in you to control a dragon, you know. That is only the case with ones who need to be rebonded. There are still numerous types of dragons out there for us to discover, and we don't have any idea what goes into their choosing of a bondmate.
You hear that? I teased the hedgehog boy. There are still plenty of fish in the sea that don't require you to get with my daughter.
But I want to get with...
Kalon began, but I cut him off with a death glare before he could finish his sentence. The Spindrel boy tensed up, shut his mouth tightly, and refused to look me in the eyes. Damn straight. This is huge, Bungal. I returned to our earlier conversation. If we know your kind likes to nest in volcanoes, then perhaps we can narrow down where we need to look for them.
But Bungal himself wasn't in a volcano.
Shala argued.
Whatever that is. He was just in the Great Abyss.
Oh, dear.
Bungal clicked his tongue.
I know they cannot communicate with me, but perhaps you should inform them that it was a volcano. A currently dormant one, but a volcano nonetheless.
Well,
Nadir started.
Bungal says he chose the Great Abyss because it was a volcano.
That actually would make a lot of sense. You said there were rumors the Great Abyss was a tunnel straight to the underworld, right?
Those were the rumors.
Alvi nodded. Why do you think that? Other than the fact one of your friends got swallowed up by the creature inside.
There were strange sounds that came from deep within the tunnel,
Errol explained.
Lots of strange growls and grunts, along with noises that sounded like rocks scraping against rock.
And the glow. Don't forget the red glow.
That'd be a volcano. And by the sound of it, it might have been one prime for an eruption.
Forgive me for my ignorance,
Pei interjected.
But what happens when one of these volcanoes has an eruption?
Lots of lava everywhere. Ash and soot get blasted out into the sky so much it can block out the sun, and super hot red goo covers everything around the area. Depending on how large the volcano is, its blast could even wipe out all life around it.
And we were living near that?
Shala gasped.
Oh, bless my spines.
It was dormant. There was no need to worry, or else I wouldn't have taken up residence inside.
You probably would have been fine. Or maybe not. It's always kind of a crapshoot when it comes to the forces of nature.
Very true.
Valeya agreed.
There is nothing fiercer in this world than nature itself.
Other than maybe the orcs?
Lazan interjected.
Or those goblins, if they've created more deadly weapons. So?
Nadir grumbled as she impatiently tapped her foot.
Not that I haven't been having a great time hanging out here on the beach with you all, but are we going to go out and smash those tiny weaklings or not? I'm with Nadir.
Alvi growled.
They killed our people. I want to kill them.
We'll have to find them first. And we can't just kill them all. We need to find out exactly what they're doing and where they are conducting all their experiments.
Also, what kinds of weapons they have created.
Mira added.
As much as I would love to simply drive my spear through each and every one of their skulls, we must show some restraint. That's no fun.
Lazan harumphed. It's not like you two are coming along anyway. Somebody needs to hang back and watch the ship, and you can't just take our babies into battle.
We won't have to,
Nadir declared with a proud grin.
I already have somebody lined up to watch them.
I'm going with Ben, I'm afraid.
Valeya clarified.
I want to learn the secrets of these goblins and how they can create such strange creations using nothing but plants. Yeah.
Marilla interjected.
I sat out the last time, so I think I want to go along.
I wasn't talking about either of you.
Nadir clarified.
I had someone much more rotund in mind.
Nadir smirked as she turned around to face Bungal. Meanwhile, the dragon glanced back over his shoulder to see if there was anyone else behind him.
Me?
The thespian-accented dragon gasped.
Why, I don't know the first thing about childcare.
There is not much to it. All you have to do is keep them on your back and protect them from anything that comes out of the forest. They seem to really like your dragon arm, so all you need to do is lull them to sleep and they'll probably be out the entire time we are gone.
What if they make waste? They are wrapped up inside of this fabric, so it will go all over.
I shall stay behind as well, Jonas offered. It seems like Bungal may have his hands full with these children, and I have plenty of experience in child rearing.
You do? My mouth dropped open in awe.
Of course I do, the elderly soothsayer scoffed. I assisted Talisi and Narissa in raising your first two children, did I not?
It did take really good care of me when I ran away that one time. I think he can handle three little ones who cannot even walk yet.
Okay, I shrugged. If you're really offering to stay behind and watch the kids, though there should probably be at least one more person, preferably somebody who knows how to fight.
I'll stay.
Theora agreed.
We don't need two archers on this journey anyways.
Your company is much appreciated, particularly should an issue of violence arise, which we shall hope it will not.
It's settled then,
Nadir declared, as she patted Bungal on the shoulder.
You will all watch the kids while we go out and smash in some goblin heads. Here you go.
Nadir unfastened the baby carriers from her chest and then gently slid them from around her body. She handed Okir and Terra to Jonas, who cradled both the infants in his arms lovingly. Meanwhile, Lazan pulled Jaren from her back and handed him off to Bungal. Bungal took the end of the fabric delicately in his mouth, and then placed his front paws underneath the child to support him. The size discrepancy between the two was almost comical, and I couldn't help but chuckle as Bungal slowly moved Jaren over into Theora's waiting arms. Once the two children were safely in the hands of Bungal and Jonas, the rest of us turned and began to head toward the maroon forest.
Take care of them, Uncle Bungal!
I winked back at the fat brown dragon as we walked up the beach.
I shall, Benjamin. I swear on my life that no harm shall come to any of your children, not while I am around.
I fully believed it, too. Even if those goblin bastards came across our shelter, there was no way in hell they would stand a chance against Bungal. He'd light them up like a Christmas tree, before they even had a chance to throw one of their little vials of powder, or whatever other tricks they had up their sleeves. If Bungal didn't get to them first, then Theora would have a fucking field day with her arrows. Then there was Jonas, who could fight on his own, but was mainly present for childcare reasons. I couldn't have asked for a better crew to take care of my children if I had tried. It didn't take long for us to reach the forest of red conifer trees, so we slowly entered through the tree line as we brushed branches out of our way and tried to remain as stealthy as we could. It was somewhat difficult to do with Tyrion and Saren along, since they both lumbered across the forest with short plodding steps. But if things went south, the two dragons were the two crewmates we wouldn't want to be without.
How are we going to find these goblins anyways?
Ashanti asked, from atop her oversized ant.
This island is huge, and we have no idea where the ones at the camp even came from.
Well, I was hoping Valeya could assist us with that one.
Me?
The blonde hedgehog woman gasped.
I don't even know what a goblin looks like. How would I know where to find them?
You don't need to know where they are, or what they look like. But the goblins are causing disturbances in the natural world, right? They're adding new flora to the environment, breaking branches, and uprooting plants all around the island.
Their auras.
The blonde hedgehog woman grinned as her epiphany kicked in.
The auras of the forest can help guide us.
Oh, not this again.
Shala rolled her eyes.
The trees aren't going to magically give us directions on how to get through this giant forest.
Of course not.
Valea confirmed, as she held out her right arm and bowed her head.
But if I can read the auras of the living things in the forest as we travel, I will be able to sense when they are disturbed.
And when they're disturbed, that means goblins could be near.
Valmatre, Mertulius, Sinche.
Valea muttered underneath her breath. As the hedgehog woman spoke, the golden locks on her head floated up into the air and drifted around her head as if she were underwater. Valea continued to whisper in her native tongue as she slowly moved her open palm in the direction of many different trees until she finally let out a sigh. Anything?
The auras of these trees are perfectly normal. They're not distressed in the slightest.
Then we need to keep moving. We'll stop every few minutes or so, and then you can read the auras to see what they're saying.
So, we're just gonna walk around randomly until we accidentally stumble across goblins?
Shala snorted.
Okay.
We continued to push on into the forest for nearly an hour, and we passed by the goblin camp we'd raided before and saw the bodies of the tiny gray bastards were still there, decomposing in the mid-afternoon sun. Valea continued to read the auras of the forest as we passed through, though much to our frustration, she didn't seem to come across anything out of the ordinary. As we got deeper into the woods, however, I started to notice some irregularities. The tall, maroon pines were now missing splotches of their bark and had large scratch marks all around their trunks. The ground became much more level, with fewer jutting rocks or roots inside of the soil, and much less canopy above us. What about now? I don't know about you, but something doesn't feel quite right about this area. The blonde woman stopped, held out her hand, and muttered her incantation once more. This time she let out a slight whimper as she read the auras of the trees around her.
Oh, it's awful, Ben!
She gasped, with her eyes still closed.
There is great distress here, and I sense these trees have been the subject of great modification.
Modification?
Mira questioned with a raised eyebrow.
What kind of modification?
I don't know. All I know is I sense great pain in these trees.
I wonder if this is the area where the goblins pull their plants from. The terrain is definitely different, which would be the case if they were pulling up roots and tearing out plants and...
Oh, no!
Valea cut me off with a sudden cry.
What is this?
The blonde hedgehog woman's palm was now facing off to the left, but it wasn't particularly pointed at any one tree. What's going on, Valea? I asked, as I placed my hands on her shoulders. What do you feel?
Great pain!
She began to sob.
I sense great torment deeper into these woods, Ben. I don't know what it is exactly, but something up there is crying out to me in agony.
It had to be the goblins. Only evil little bastards like that could cause such suffering. I drew my sword from its sheath before I looked back at all my friends. Look alive, people. We need to go find out whatever the fuck is going on and shut it down before it causes any more misery. I took a deep breath, and then I led my crew further into the woods. As we walked through the brush and the bramble, I heard a few nasally cackles from up ahead. The goblins. However, the sound I heard next made my heart fall into my stomach. It was a deep, anguished roar that sounded like a mighty beast begging for its life. We moved in closer to the goblins until we finally saw their lanky outlines in the distance, but they were not alone. All of the little gray bastards stood around a creature about the size of a St. Bernard dog, though it was covered in bright red feathers rather than fur. The creature's snout was smushed flat against its face, but it still had razor-sharp teeth that it bared at its antagonizers. Worst of all, the poor thing's back foot was caught in some sort of snare.
I can't believe we finally caught one of these,
one of the gray-skinned bastards declared.
These are the rarest animals on the whole damn island, and now we've got one.
Our boss is gonna love us for this one,
another one cackled.
But we can't let it come in all pissed off. We're gonna have to tame this guy first, and you know what that means.
We get to have all sorts of fun with it.
One of the goblins rubbed his hands together as he grinned, and then he pulled his dagger from his belt. Not on my watch, fuckers. I didn't know what this creature was, but I wasn't about to let it get tortured by these goblin bastards. I gripped my sea glass sword tightly and prepared to attack.